there's 3.5 million documents that have yet to come out, or 3 million documents. I think those documents would get into, we haven't seen a lot. We've seen Epstein leverage Bill Gates in a way, and we've seen Epstein be pretty vicious to Leon Black. But I think that there's another tranche that would probably show, or maybe show, that we have our checks and balances in this country is blackmail.
Hi, I'm John Kiriakou, and welcome back to Deep Focus. So much of the news, the non-Iran invasion news, has been on the continuing fallout from the Epstein files release. The Justice Department released another 3 million or so pages of documents. There are another 2.7 to 3.5 million pages that Pam Bondi just decided, tough luck, she's not going to release. That's a topic for another episode. But there's so much information in this latest tranche of Epstein documents that it kind of changes the narrative in a lot of ways. We're going to talk about this with one of the country's foremost experts on Epstein. That's Nick Bryant. Nick is director of Epstein Justice. He's an accomplished activist and writer. He's been published in multiple journals. He's on podcasts and TV shows all over America and the author of several books. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, John.
Nick, let's start off with accountability. There are a lot of crimes that have come out of this tranche of documents from the Epstein files and previous releases, but we keep hearing about statutes of limitations. Now, in the UK, former Prince Andrew and the former British ambassador to the United States have both been charged with crimes for documents that they gave to Jeffrey Epstein. Why are we not seeing charges here in the United States? Is this really about statutes of limitations?
No, there isn't a statute of limitations in the federal system for child trafficking. So there's no reason why these child traffickers should not be indicted. Absolutely no reason whatsoever, other than our Department of Justice and FBI is very corrupt. That is the primary reason, but it's been that way for a very long time. People talk about this latest tranche of documents, and granted, there's some stuff that's come out in this latest tranche that is very horrific, and it corroborates a number of the things that I've said over the years, but we don't even need this tranche to start indicting people. We know who the procurers are. Sarah Kellen, Adriana Ross, Leslie Groff, Nadia Marcinkova, they know about Epstein's entire operation. They knew who the perps were. They knew who was blackmailed. They knew who the victims were. And we've had this information for many years. And all it would require is for a non-corrupt grand jury to be impaneled and start indicting on these women on multiple counts of child trafficking. And when they're looking at 5 or 10 counts of child trafficking, they're going to roll over on the perps. It would be that simple. And then we'd have to protect the witnesses, who we know many of them are, from the perps. It would be that simple. I mean, it's done that way with the mafia all the time. This would be just actually kind of a rudimentary RICO prosecution. And in the latest tranche of documents, Sarah Kellen, who was Ghislaine Maxwell's right-hand woman, actually tried to make a deal with the feds. She was going to tell him everything and wanted a non-prosecution agreement, and the feds turned her down.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I think that's a very important point. This 2008 plea deal that was negotiated with Alexandra Acosta. It was Alexandra Acosta, yes? Yeah, Alex. Yes. Alex Acosta. He was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida, later the Secretary of Labor under Donald Trump. We've called this a sweetheart deal on the show in the past. Everybody calls it a sweetheart deal. Do we know now from this latest tranche of documents that at the time that this sweetheart deal was being negotiated, that the Justice Department actually had evidence of broader crimes, that they could have brought charges against additional people?
That has been new information that's come out. I've been investigating Epstein since 2011, and I was told contradictory stories about a federal grand jury. I was told that a federal grand jury was impaneled, and then it was adjourned, and then I was told that there wasn't a federal grand jury that was impaneled. Actually, there was a federal grand jury that was impaneled, and it had a draft of 60 counts indictment against Jeffrey Epstein. And count 51 was child trafficking, which, as I said earlier, that's a heavy sentence. So what happened was, and there's an email about this, Ken Starr and the quote-unquote top brass of the FBI went down to pressure Alexander Acosta. And I've said it before, there's only two people in the government that can tell a U.S. attorney to stand down. One is the attorney general and one is the president. Now, Alexander Acosta isn't going to go out on a limb and cover up a nationwide pedophile network unless he's told to. And actually, this latest tranche said he was pressured to. Alberto Gonzalez, as the attorney general, he's not going to go out on a limb and cover up a nationwide pedophile network unless he is told to. So the buck stops at Bush 2. That's where these orders emanated from.
Boy, oh boy. Do the files, Nick, reveal missed opportunities, let's say, by federal agencies, times when investigators could have pursued stronger charges or charges against different people but elected not to?
The Maria Farmer had said that she went to the FBI in 1996 and reported Epstein. And those files have come out, and she did, in fact, go to the FBI in 1996, according to these documents. So he could have been stopped in 1996.
Oh, my God.
And think of all the girls that are now very damaged young women that could have been saved if the FBI and the Department of Justice had done the right thing in 1996.
Yeah. What do these documents reveal about Epstein's financial structure? I was talking to a journalist for a former journalist for the Village Voice the other day, and he said that the Village Voice did an article about Epstein in 1993. It was very, very early because he was being rumored as the next owner of the Village Voice. And so this reporter tried to do a deep dive into the nature of Epstein's wealth, right? And could find literally nothing. And so they just decided to describe him as mysterious money man, Jeffrey Epstein. Do these documents tell us anything new about the origins of Epstein's money, offshore accounts, shell companies, his relationship with Les Wexner? Is there anything that's new?
We knew that Les Wexner gave Jeffrey Epstein power of attorney in 1991.
Yeah.
And that launched Jeffrey Epstein, although he had been selling arms prior to that.
Arms?
And I think he had been an arms dealer. And actually, he was pulling off arms deals up until relatively recently with Ehud Barak of Israel.
Good
so
Lord.
He was getting money. Initially, he was working with Douglas Leeds, who was a British arms dealer and a big-time British arms dealer. He put together the biggest arms deal that's ever been put together by the UK. And he had Tony Blair fly to Saudi Arabia to make sure that it was on the right path. And actually, there were a number of really high-ranking British people in on that deal. But Epstein had split from him before that, but that's the kind of pull that this guy had. He had pull within, I believe, MI6 and also within American intelligence. And he was selling arms to Iran when Iran was having that war with Iraq. And we were selling arms to Iran. Now, with Epstein, he got involved with a guy named Stan Ponger, who had been an assistant attorney general, who was selling arms to, he was part the early part of Iran-Contra. He was the guy that first went to Ayatollah Khamenei's nephew and offered to broker an arms deal. So Epstein, and he was in business with Epstein for 3 years. They said a tax relief business, but both of them were selling arms. So I don't know how much tax relief they did. But then we know that Epstein got that huge jump in 1991 from Wexner. And we also know, but this is kind of interesting. I try to read as many Epstein articles as I possibly can. And Vanity Fair, which is a relatively sophisticated magazine, said that the reason why Les Wexner gave Jeffrey Epstein power of attorney over his vast empire was because Les Wexner was lonely.
Oh, my God.
You can't make it up. Vanity Fair actually said that. And then Leon Black gave him approximately $160 million. And we are told that Leon Black gave Epstein $160 million because Epstein was going to help him with his taxes. Leon Black is worth about $5 billion, and he's got a battalion of accountants. He probably pays less in taxes than you or me. And then the latest tranche of documents does show that the Rothschilds gave Jeffrey Epstein $25 million. So that we knew that there might have been some kind of relationship because they were in the Black Book. But yes, so Epstein gleaned at least $25 million from the Rothschilds.
When high-profile figures appear repeatedly in investigative records, Nick, are there any mechanisms in place to ensure that political or financial pressures don't derail prosecutions? Or, and I hate to sound cynical, but if you're rich and famous and powerful, can you count on being treated differently by the justice system?
Well, we've seen that over the years, not just with Epstein, but we've seen it time and time again, that there's two tiers of justice. Justice for people that have money, and then justice for people that don't have money. It's been that way for a long time. But with Epstein, it's different, because we know that he committed really atrocious crimes that included pandering girls that were even under the age of 12. We know that. And we also know that the government covered up his crimes. And if you cover up a crime, you're aiding and abetting that crime. So with Epstein, we have the government aiding and abetting the most heinous of crimes. And that's what makes Epstein different, is because we know that our governments have lied to get us into wars, and we've overthrown dictators and things like that. But to be trafficking children, to be aiding and abetting in the very least the trafficking of children, that's something that's very different from the other crimes that we've known our country has committed.
I have to take a break because we have a word from one of our sponsors. I have seen governments fall. I've watched currencies collapse overnight. I've even been in the room when some people made decisions that moved entire economies. And I can tell you that what's happening now is not normal. The U.S. just struck Iran. Oil is surging. The dollar is under pressure from every direction. And the national debt just crossed $38 trillion with no plan to slow it down. Meanwhile, central banks around the world are doing something that they've never done at this scale before. They're buying gold, massive amounts of it, more than is what's being produced. China, Russia, India, Poland, they're all stockpiling physical gold at the fastest pace in recorded history. They see what's coming. The question is, do you? Most Americans have their entire retirements sitting in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds that are completely exposed to what's unfolding right now. But here's what almost nobody talks about. you can move your 401k or IRA into physical gold tax-free and penalty-free. The IRS allows it, and it's completely legal. You cannot put a digital tracker on physical gold. I partnered up with American Alternative Assets to give you a free report called the Global Crisis Playbook. It explains exactly what the central banks know that you don't and how to use the same strategy that they're using to protect your retirement savings. Get the free report now to protect your retirement against the coming instability. Go to johnlovesgold.com to get your free report. That's johnlovesgold.com or call 1-888-GOLD-053 and they'll mail one to you. Nick, back to these questions. You hear a lot of people say that, you know, with Jeffrey Epstein's death, whether it was suicide or murder, it's essentially closed off lines of investigation. Do you believe that's true, or are there lines of investigation, meaningful investigation, that just haven't been pursued yet? And if so, what do you think those are?
As I said earlier, we know who the recruiters and procurers are. And we know who a lot of the perps are. We just need a Department of Justice that has a will to prosecute this case. There's enough information out there. There was enough information even before this latest tranche of documents. What we need is an uncorrupt Department of Justice that cares about children, that's willing to prosecute this case. That's really the only thing we're missing. We've got everything else, but that's the only thing we're missing is a non-corrupt Department of Justice.
Some observers have speculated that Epstein may have had ties to intelligence services. I've been very public that I believe he was a Mossad access agent. And it seems to me, Nick, that in these latest documents, it goes well beyond that, that he actively sought ties to the CIA, to the FBI, to MI5, MI6, maybe the Germans, maybe the Russians. What are you seeing in the actual documents to prove credible evidence suggesting involvement by some of these agencies or other countries?
It was either Forbes or the Wall Street Journal, I can't remember which one, that said that Jeffrey Epstein had three meetings with Bill Burns before Bill Burns was named CIA director. And Bill Burns said that, and this was after Jeffrey Epstein had been a convicted child molester, Bill Burns said that he went to Epstein for financial counseling because he was going into the private sector. Well, they met a lot more than three times. And you've got documents where Peter Thiel and Jeffrey Epstein and William Burns are getting together and meeting, which is very frightening to me to have that triumvirate getting together. But obviously, Bill Burns and Jeffrey Epstein had, I think, a fairly close relationship. And I think that, I mean, his prior excuses are just absurdly disingenuous. There was some kind of symbiosis there.
That makes me so angry. I even wrote an op-ed at the very start of the Biden administration when Burns was named CIA director saying, this actually is a great pick because Burns is a professional. He's been the deputy secretary of state. He was ambassador to a half a dozen countries. He's going to be the adult in the room. And here he was in this weird relationship with Epstein the whole time. Makes me sick to my stomach. Crazy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, a guy like Bill Burns, I mean, he looks clean.
Yeah.
If you just look at him on the outside, you look at his history, the guy looks clean, but then all of a sudden this latest tranche of documents comes out and he's not clean. And he was lying about getting together with Jeffrey Epstein. And who knows what the hell Bill Burns and Peter Thiel were talking about. And Peter Thiel was launching Palantir, which is, I think, a very bad idea for the American public.
Yeah. I want to ask you a couple of very specific questions. We've talked a lot, and in fact, you and I have talked in previous shows about surveillance equipment. There have been extensive reports that Epstein's homes were wired for sound and for video, extensive surveillance equipment in all of the mansions. Did these new records confirm whether cameras were installed in guest rooms and other areas to be used for any specific purpose like blackmail? Or was this just some weird kind of kink that, you know, he wanted cameras everywhere?
Maria Farmer talks about Epstein showing her this room, and so does Virginia Giuffre, where there was a secret room in Epstein's mansion in New York, and there were two men looking at the monitors. And she looked up, and there was a monitor of every bedroom and every bathroom. So right there, you've got two men monitoring those hidden cameras. That's a conspiracy of some sort. And I think that there's 3.5 million documents that have yet to come out, or 3 million documents. I think those documents would get into, we haven't seen a lot. We've seen Epstein leverage Bill Gates in a way, and we've seen Epstein be pretty vicious to Leon Black. But I think that there's another tranche that would probably show, or maybe show, that we have our checks and balances in this country is blackmail.
Yeah, you can say that again. Do the new documents show any funding sources that we didn't know about? Anything resembling intelligence style funding or financing? Unexplained cash flows, intermediary entities, shell companies, anything like that? Anything to give us an idea of whether or not he was being paid from an outside entity like an intelligence service for services provided?
I haven't really seen a lot of those documents, but again, I haven't been going through the documents as assiduously as some others. And there's some databases with AI that can help people find. But yes, I have not come across any documents other than the Rothschild documents that would show that Jeffrey Epstein was getting money from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. You keep hearing this word compromat too. And, you know, it just seems to me that an organization like the Mossad, for example, would want compromising photographs, compromising documents on very important people, people like Bill Clinton or Prince Andrew or Bill Gates or whomever, Bill Burns. I mean, who wouldn't want compromising information on the director of the CIA? In your view, was the collection of this kind of information, this kind of photo, these kinds of photographs, typical of Epstein's personality? Had he been doing this since the 90s? Was this something new? And if it was something new, do you think it was something that he was tasked with doing?
Well, I definitely think he was tasked with doing this, because what people don't understand is Epstein by himself was a college dropout from a working class family. His father was a gardener for the city of New York. And if you look at his black book and listen to some witness testimony, he had the goods on some of the most powerful people in the world. And Epstein had to have an organization behind him that told these people, if you harm Jeffrey Epstein, there's going to be retribution. I think that's the only way that Epstein could have blackmailed some of the most powerful guys in the world.
I've got to ask you about something that has bothered me very much since I heard about it. There were something like 1,500 documents about beef jerky. Jeffrey's friend is coming with his beef jerky recipe. Don't forget that Jeffrey's friend is going to show us how to make beef jerky. Oh, we made beef jerky. It was the best beef jerky ever. we're freezing the beef jerky. 1,500, 1,300 documents all about beef jerky. The one thing that they never talked about was actually eating beef jerky, which then, of course, leads me to believe that none of these documents were actually about beef jerky. Can you speculate as to what
this was? I mean, I haven't really tackled the beef jerky side of this yet, so I really couldn't give an informed opinion. I mean, people would accuse me of being a CIA agent because I'm not willing to expend a thought on it. But yeah, I mean, obviously it's code. They're like in one of the emails between Oliver Colombe, it's an email exchange between Oliver Colombe and Epstein. And Epstein says, I've got an aquarium of girls. And then they talk about white sharks and then black sharks and how they are black shrimp and how they don't like black shrimp. And it's very obvious. And then shrimp without their heads. And I think it's very obvious that they're using that as shrimp and sharks as a metaphor. It's obviously both of them are very racist. I don't think they're talking about decapitation. I think they're talking about a woman or a girl's body and not paying any attention to their mind. Now, these are very misogynistic people. I mean, these emails are seismically misogynistic. So Epstein did not have a very high opinion of women. And it amazes me that he had women friends because he was very much a misogynist.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I want to take another quick break for another word from one of our sponsors. Healthcare in this country is heavily influenced by politics and large pharmaceutical companies. We all know that. Policies change, access changes, and medications that were once easy to get can suddenly become harder to access. That's why you need a place like All Family Pharmacy. They're a licensed U.S. pharmacy focused on access and transparency, not on politics. In most areas of life, we prepare financially, for security, for emergencies. Preparing your medicine cabinet should be no different. Instead of getting a small supply and running back every 30 days for refills, you could order ahead and keep a 3 to 6 month supply on hand. I'm talking about antibiotics, antivirals, ivermectin, mebendazole, NAD+, blood pressure meds, and more than 300 other prescription medications. You choose what you need on the website, a licensed doctor reviews your request, prescribes it if appropriate, and your medication ships directly to your door. Healthcare should not depend on politics or corporate gatekeeping. So stock up today and save 10% on your essential medications. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/John and use promo code JOHN10 to save 10%. So another question that I have, and I'm asking you this from a very selfish perspective, is a whole bunch of emails from former White House counsel during the Obama administration, Catherine Remmler. I don't like this woman. I don't trust this woman. I don't know why she was constantly working to try to introduce Jeffrey Epstein to John Brennan, who was then the CIA director under Barack Obama. But there was one email that bothered me the most, and it was an email from Catherine Remmler to Jeffrey Epstein saying, John Brennan gave me the CIA's top honor today. Pretty neat, huh? Why in the world would John Brennan give this random White House woman the top award at the CIA that is almost exclusively reserved for CIA officers who are killed in the line of duty? We don't know. But we know that after that award, she tried repeatedly to broker either a lunch or a breakfast between John Brennan and Jeffrey Epstein. Now, with at least 3 million documents still waiting to be released, which may never be released, according to Pam Bondi, have you seen any indication that such a meeting took place? And can you speculate on why Catherine Remmler was trying to put John Brennan and Jeffrey Epstein together?
I saw those emails, and because I'd come across the Bill Burns emails initially before I came across Remmler Brennan email, I think that Epstein wanted to inveigle himself into the lives of CIA directors. He obviously did with Bill Burns. And I think that, and you might have a different take on this, but I think that there is a strata of CIA that they, regardless of Democrats or Republicans, they're there for their careers. And I think it's within that strata that very negative things are hatched. One might call them, for lack of a better word, the deep state or shadow government or something like that. But I think that there is a dark, malignant corner of our intelligence that perpetrates things. And I don't know if CIA directors are even aware of those things.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I can tell you, at least as far as the secret prison program was concerned, these secret prisons were created based on handshake deals between George Tenet and the head of, you know, whatever country's intelligence service. In almost every one of those cases, the presidents and prime ministers of those countries had no idea that there was a secret CIA prison on their soil. So why should we be surprised if at the top levels of the CIA, Jeffrey Epstein was inveigling himself or maybe even doing work on behalf of the CIA and the higher ups didn't even know it? Stranger things certainly have happened.
Well, look at how huge Iran-Contra was. That was a major operation. And that entire operation was completely illegal. And we would not probably have heard about it if Eugene Haas' plane hadn't been shot down. And it was
filled
with
oxygen. That's how it all started. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
So I don't think it's unorthodox for the CIA to do programs that are dark and unknown by the executive branch.
Yeah. After Epstein's arrest, second arrest, and his death, authorities grabbed like huge amounts of digital evidence. They bragged about it in the news at the time. Do we know which agencies at the end of the day reviewed those materials and whether they were fully analyzed?
Well, this is where the Trump administration has lied profusely. So the day that Jeffrey Epstein was arrested, his safe in New York was sliced open. And there were a lot of disks and there were hard drives. And according to the New York Times, there were disks of very young girls. And according to Pam Bondi, there's footage of Jeffrey Epstein molesting young girls and that footage that got impounded. But here's where the Trump administration really told an absurd lie. The FBI and maybe some other three-letter agency, I mean, they couldn't open that safe fast enough. And whatever they took out of that safe, they were probably doing double shifts, making sure who was in it and who was not in it. And Pam Bondi led us to believe that that stuff has been sitting in the corner of the FBI for the last 6 years and nobody's looked at it. And they're just looking at it now. And that lie is so transparent. I mean, she doesn't really show her face too much anymore. Todd Blanch is kind of the face of the Department of Justice. But she has told so many lies with regards to all things Epstein. It's kind of mind-boggling at this point.
Yeah, it really is mind-boggling. I was on a panel recently on the Piers Morgan show that included David Boies, the renowned criminal defense attorney, Hillary Clinton's personal attorney. The guy's, you know, the gold standard of criminal defense. And he said that he and his staff had gone through every page of these new Epstein files and that they were not able to find any evidence of a crime having been committed by Donald Trump or Bill Clinton. But then we keep hearing rumors of Donald Trump being involved with a girl as young as 13 to 15. What's the truth here? Does evidence of a crime exist for either one of these guys?
Well, Bill Clinton, we know, flew with Jeffrey Epstein, and we also know Donald Trump flew with Epstein. We knew that Bill Clinton was on the island. We don't know whether or not Donald Trump is on the island. They seem to have had a rupture in 2004. We don't know exactly why that rupture occurred. There was a girl named Katie Johnson, and she filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. She said that they had molested her when she was 13 years old. And she ended up with Lisa Bloom as her attorney, and Lisa Bloom really likes to pump up the fanfare. She's a very good self-promoter. And now this is what was told to me, that the woman who used the pseudonym Katie Johnson was deposited in a hotel in LA when she lived closer to San Diego. And then the next morning, Lisa Bloom picked her up and said, "We're going to do a press conference today." So, and I guess according to Lisa Bloom, people had threatened her, had called her and threatened her. And by the time she got to the press conference, she essentially recanted everything. She wanted nothing to do with it. And I spent 3 years looking for her, and I found her. She's living in the Southwest. She's selling real estate. She's got a boyfriend. They go to Europe. I can see that on her Facebook page. But she's completely unwilling to talk to me. And there was a supporting affidavit from a Tiffany Doe who said that she recruited Katie Johnson for Jeffrey Epstein. I wasn't able to find her. I just haven't been able to find her. But I was able to find Katie Johnson, and she wouldn't talk to me. And if her allegations are true, why would she bring that kind of heat on herself again? And if her allegations are false, why would she open herself up to those kind of problems? So I really wish she would have talked to me, and I really wish I could offer a much better idea of her veracity. But at this point, I'm kind of agnostic about it.
Nick, what do you think of this statement by Attorney General Pam Bondi the other day that we're done, no more releases, when the congressional mandate could not have been any more crystal clear? 419-1 in the House, 99-0 in the Senate to release these documents. The president signed it into law. It's not up to Pam Bondi to say, "No, you've had enough. I'm not releasing anymore." So now what? Lawsuits?
I do not see. I just don't see Pam Bondi making any actions without the approval of her master, Donald Trump. I think that's why he's kept her around, is because she's going to be completely obsequious to him. And I believe he's kept Cash Patel around because Cash Patel is going to be completely obsequious to him. So with where we're at now, I think it's very obvious that if this stays within the political system, we are not going to get answers. We have a lot of more documents now, and these documents delineate some really evil acts. And some of them are disinformation, some of them are misinformation, but then some of them aren't. And they're just dripping with evil.
Right.
Like
right.
Someone, there was a United Arab Emirate billionaire that sent Jeffrey Epstein torture video, and then Epstein emailed him back, "I loved the torture video." And there was a Harvard professor. They had an exchange about torture, and he's since taken leave. And then there was Mark Trammo. He's an MD and a PhD, a neuroscientist from UCLA. And he wrote it. And this is the one that really got me. I've been in this world for a long time, but this one got me. He said, was just reading today, that newborns will suck on a pacifier more vigorously if triggers playback of recording of his or her mother's voice than another woman's voice. So why is this guy sending an email to Jeffrey Epstein talking about how to make infants suck harder? I mean, that one really got me. So what we're dealing with is extremely rarefied evil, but as long as it's in the political system, our current political system, we're not going to get answers. These are documents that need answers. There needs to be a lot less redaction because the Trump administration has not honored the letter of the law. The only people that were going to be redacted were the victims. And I personally know a victim, and there was enough information given about her where it was quite easy to discern who she was. And she was pandered to a very wealthy, evil guy. So it was very, very troubling to her. But I started an organization called Epstein Justice. And what we want is an independent congressional commission. And the thing about independent congressional commissions is they don't require a presidential signature. They require a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate. But they often deploy non-government personnel for investigations.
That's right.
And exclusively non-government personnel. So that's what we need. We need an independent congressional commission that has two objectives, two very simple objectives. One, we want to know why the government covered up child trafficking. And two, we want the perpetrators to be prosecuted.
That is exactly right. Well, I'm going to hope that Congress wants to do the right thing. I'm going to hope that Pam Bondi was speaking out of turn. I'm going to hope that Donald Trump realizes that if he wants the legacy that he believes he deserves, he's got to release the remainder of these documents. So I know hope's not a strategy, as they say in grad school, business school, but I'm hoping for the best. Nick, what are you working on right now besides these voluminous files?
Epstein Justice is something that I throw my entire energy into.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, for years I was a freelance writer, and I liked being a writer. But with Epstein, I saw that this was mind-boggling to me. No organizations were pursuing this, any kind of justice. And I had never dealt with a 501c3. I had no idea what I was doing. But I started a 501c3, and I attracted some really good people, and we were pushing for this congressional commission, and it's not going to be an easy fight. We know that, but I think we're fighting for the soul of our country.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I agree,
we have a country that's aiding and abetting child trafficking, and we have to do something about this. As Americans, our government is not going to do anything about it. But Americans, and there are 300 million adults in the United States. And if 10% of them came with us, we'd be able to do it. We'd have 30 million people. In the Revolutionary War, a third were for the revolution, a third were Tories, and a third were neutral. So our founding fathers were able to fight for America and with only a third of the population. We need
pretty great.
Just 10%.
Great. Nick Bryant, thanks so much for joining us. It's good to see you again, as always.
Take care.
Folks, that's another episode of Deep Focus. We can only do this because of you. So thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, and telling your family and friends. Please keep that up. We're growing by leaps and bounds, and we're going to continue to bring fascinating guests like Nick Bryant for your enjoyment. So long.